Our Bible reading today comes from Luke 9, verses 28 to 36, reading from the New Living Translation. The Transfiguration. About 8 days later, Jesus took Peter, John, and James up on a mountain to pray. And as he was praying, the appearance of his face was transformed, and his clothes became dazzling white. Suddenly, two men, Moses and Elijah, appeared and began talking with Jesus. They were glorious to see, and they were speaking about his exodus from this world, which was about to be fulfilled in Jerusalem. Peter and the others had fallen asleep. When they woke up, they saw Jesus' glory and the two men standing with him. As Moses and Elijah were starting to leave, Peter, not even knowing what he was saying, blurted out, "Master, it's wonderful for us to be here. Let's make three shelters as memorials, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." But even as he was saying this, a cloud overshadowed them, and terror gripped them as the cloud covered them. Then a voice from the cloud said, "This is my son, my chosen one. Listen to him." When the voice finished, Jesus was there alone. They didn't tell anyone at that time what they had seen. Thanks be to God for the reading of his holy word.
2.5 years into my ministry at my first congregation of St. Giles in Johannesburg, my ministry almost came to an end. I'm glad to say it wasn't because I was so bad at it. I'd like to say it was because I was too good at it, but that wouldn't be true either. The trouble was that I was just good enough. I'd come out of the academic world of the university, full of new ideas, and I trained under one of the best ministers during my probation, and so I knew what to do, and so I set about doing what I needed to do. And I could do it well enough for the congregation to feel that I wasn't shortchanging them. I preached regularly, led Bible studies, visited the sick, conducted funerals, but the church was just ticking over. I hasten to add, it wasn't the congregation's fault. They were deeply appreciative of the ministry they received and eager to serve. They just needed some direction. But instead of giving them direction, I was simply letting things tick over week by week, month by month, year by year. During a holiday that year, I sank into a deep melancholy. Fortunately, my brother-in-law, who is a deeply spiritual man and very wise, said to me, "Neil, you're better than that." And so I went back with a bit of energy and with new ideas, and I took the church I was in through 18 months of listening to God, doing strategic planning, and developing something that could give them some vision for the future. And I can say that several ministries later, that vision that they set way back then is still running and is still giving them energy. It led them to do all sorts of interesting and creative missional things in that church. Here's the point. Here's why I'm telling you this. It's not that I suddenly got better at doing what I was doing. Jim Collins, the management guru, wrote a book called Good to Great, in which his main thesis was that good is the enemy of great. He argued that as long as you're just being good enough, you don't ever reach out for greatness. What I did with that congregation, in hindsight, is simply that I reminded them that they were part of something much greater. They were part of something that Jesus was doing. This Sunday is the Sunday of the Transfiguration, when we remember the moment when Jesus' very person and visage is transformed in the sight of his disciples. But more importantly, this was a turning point in his ministry. If we look at the context in Luke's gospel, this was the moment when Jesus set his face towards Jerusalem and headed to do the work he needed to do on the cross. If we look at the context of chapter 9 of Luke's gospel and then peeping into chapter 10, we see that chapter 9 begins with Jesus sending out 12 disciples to proclaim the kingdom of God and to heal. And they do so, and they do so quite well. Even Herod gets to hear about them, and their whole movement becomes a little bit more popular. In verse 10, we read that on their return, the apostles told Jesus all that they had done, and he took them with him and withdrew privately to a city called Bethsaida. And when the crowds found out about him there, they followed him, and that's the moment when he feeds the 5,000. And then in verses 18 to 20, he has the conversation with Peter, where he says to Peter, "Who do you say that I am?" And Peter says to him, "You are the Messiah of God." And from that time, Jesus starts moving towards Jerusalem and towards his death and starts speaking to them about that. The very first thing that happens is this moment of transfiguration. He's in prayer on the mountaintop. And just as Moses had seen God face to face on the mountaintop, and just as Elijah had encountered God on the mountaintop, so Jesus does too. And he and Moses and Elijah begin to shine. And the disciples are catching a glimpse of Jesus' glory. A voice comes from heaven, "This is my son, my chosen one, listen to him." It's a glorious moment. So fantastic, in fact, that Peter immediately says, let's pin this moment down. Let's build a little hut for Moses and one for Elijah and one for Jesus. Let's stay here in this moment of glory forever. But Jesus, instead of letting them stay in that moment of glory, leads them down the hill into a setting where he immediately encounters a boy who's possessed by an evil spirit. In other words, for Jesus, it's just back to business as usual. There's something that happens. The ordinariness of life goes on even when we have moments of greatness. There's a lovely story of a former heavyweight boxer, James Quick Tills. He was a cowboy from Oklahoma who boxed in Chicago in the 1980s. He once told a story about his first day in Chicago when he arrived there. He arrived from Tulsa. He says, "I got off the bus with two cardboard suitcases under my arms. And I went to downtown Chicago and I stopped in front of the Sears Tower. And I put my suitcases down. And I looked up at this great building and I said to myself, I'm going to conquer Chicago. And when I looked down, the suitcases had been stolen." Even after a moment of glory, we're thrust back into the reality of daily life. And so it was for Jesus, but what had changed? We're told that as the time approached for him to be taken up to heaven, Jesus resolutely set out for Jerusalem. You see, he'd been reminded about who he really was. He'd caught a glimpse of glory. He had a new purpose, a new direction, a new meaning. Was he any better? Well, I don't know really. Not everyone welcomed him on his way to Jerusalem. He warned those who followed him that they were embarking on a costly journey together. And ultimately we know that his story ended with rejection on the cross. But that too was a moment of glory for him. So let me ask you about your story. How are you doing? Are you doing well enough? Are you doing perhaps a little bit better than most? Perhaps just a little bit worse than you ought to? What would happen to you if you caught a glimpse of glory? What would happen if you saw something extraordinary about your place within God's kingdom? I can't help but believe that we are made for more than just ticking over day by day, week by week, month by month. I can't help but believe that Jesus has called us to live lives that are extraordinary, lives that are great, not just good. Not that our lives will necessarily be filled with fame or wealth or power, but that they will be lives of meaning. Is it possible for us to have such an encounter with God? And if so, where can we come face to face with God? Where can we have our faces lit up like the face of Moses before God, or the face of Jesus in the Transfiguration, shining for the whole world to see? I believe there is a place where that can happen. And I believe that that place is symbolized most beautifully for us in the church in the sharing of Holy Communion. When we sit down in communion and we see something of the glory of God. You know, Victor Hugo said, "To love another person is to see the face of God." When you sit at communion, even as you're sitting now in your church or in your home or wherever it is that you're watching this, why don't you have a look at the face of somebody else nearby? Maybe your husband or your wife. If you're alone, maybe even a photograph of a family member. Do you see how beautiful they are? Do you see that they are, that they hold within themselves the image of God? Can you love them? Do you love them? Love them now. Yeah? Well, to love another person is to see the face of God and to find our place in a much bigger context of God's glory. There's a postscript to the story of Luke chapter 9. Remember at the start, Jesus sent the disciples out. Well, at the beginning of chapter 10, Jesus sends the disciples out again, 72 of them this time, more or less the same mission as they had before, to proclaim the kingdom and to heal. But this time, something extraordinary happens. The 72 return with joy this time, and they say, "Lord, even the demons submit to us in your name." Is this an occasion where their ministry moved from good to great? Jesus said to them, "Do not rejoice that the spirits submit to you, but rejoice that your names are written in heaven." We were made for glory.